We're ready to go. Good morning. This is Tuesday, September the 11th, and we are having a city council work session. Present today is City Manager Matt Brower, Councilman Jay Musley, Councilman John McLeod, Councilman Daniel Owen, and myself, Susie Heimbuffel, Councilwoman. Absent is Mary Sue Rich, Councilwoman, and Mayor Kent Gwem. The topics for discussion today is charter reform. We will start with public comments. Do we have any public comments? Please come forward and state your name and address for the record.
Fill this out if anybody gets it.
Oh.
Brian Creekbaum, 103 Northeast 31st Terrace. Mm-hmm. That's in the city of Ocala.
Thank
I'll be
you.
Very brief, especially since I don't know what ideas are going to come up.
Okay.
But obviously, it's an important topic. It's charter reform, right? I'm in the right meeting.
You are. This is it.
I just wanted to note my experience with organizations over the years. And first, I read in the banner or somewhere that part of it was to clean up ambiguities or things in the charter. And
sure.
I think when you're hiring attorneys to write multi-page memos about what your charter says on what ought to be straightforward issues, that probably indicates there are ambiguities. And I've read it a few times over the years and scratched my head. So I would agree with that. I think once you open up the topic of discussion of changing the charter, my experience with organizations is that people in various parts of them, when there are proposed changes in the organization, tend to make proposals that increase their power. Back when we had the controversy about, multi-year controversy about material in the public library system, there were and challenged books had to go through a review process. There were a number of proposals on how to handle that. People dissatisfied with the status quo. The status quo was that the library director made the final decision, and she made it clear she was happy with having that authority, or okay with having that authority. Then we had a guy on the library advisory board who had a proposal to change the system, and surprise, his idea was to change it to one where the library advisory board on which he sat would make the final decisions. And then we had a county administrator who made it clear that he thought that the system should be changed, and that he felt responsible, and that his idea of the ideal system for reviewing books was one where the county administrator made the decision. And of course, that was a position that he occupied. And then we had at least one guy on the county commission who was dissatisfied with the current system. And a surprise, his idea for changing the system was for the county commission to be the final arbiter of challenged books. So I'll sit down and be quiet because I don't know what's going to come up, but I am curious whether there will be any proposals today along the lines of anyone wanting to increase their power in an individual office or the body on which they sit. I'd be curious to see if that happens. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll turn it over to the city manager.
Thank you, Council President. I first want to begin by extending my appreciation to John, Ty, and to Jimmy. They have had the bear of this responsibility of working through the charter to bring forward changes that are generally around cleanup of the charter at this time. And so first, my thanks to each of them for the work on behalf of this project. As the agenda indicates, we'll initiate the work on the charter reform today. And in fact, what I'd like to do at this time is turn some time over to John Zolber to further introduce the topic.
Thank you, Mr. Manager. As you recall, several months ago, Council President Heimbuckle, along with City Council, have requested that staff undertake a review of the city charter. And through a series of meetings, working with Assistant City Attorney Jimmy Gooding, we've done that. We've also consulted with each of the departments, forwarding them copies of the charter and asking for their comments for their particular sections. We also forwarded those to the pension boards and other people that are listed into the charter. After a series of meetings, including discussions with MuniCode, Mr. Gooding had drafted this charter recommendations table. And the table is broken up into, as you had indicated, some house cleaning items. And as Mr. Gooding had written in a separate memorandum, issues concerning elections. We'd like to take the housekeeping items first. Those are typically highlighted in yellow on your handout. And then those that are in blue are related to elections issues. And we'd like to handle those separately and discuss them in the second half of the workshop, if that's okay. So So without further ado, we'd like to go ahead, yes.
Do we have additional copies of this?
I have some right now.
Okay.
And we're going to have a little ado here while I transfer it over to this desktop here.
I can just pull up my notes.
Okay, hold on a minute.
So again, Mr. Gooding will take us through the housekeeping items, the minor changes, talk about those things that need to be changed by, if council desires, by ordinance, and those that need to be changed by referendum, and how they might be handled in a referendum scenario.
I'd like to first, if I could, because I think Mr. Creekbaum's comments are pertinent, work off of the July 8 memo that we wrote to y'all. Do they have a copy of it?
Yeah.
It kind of explains what we're doing. I would like to say something specious, like we're going from a strong city manager form of government to a strong city attorney form of government, but.
Not everybody will see the humor in that.
Let us know when we find a strong attorney.
but we're not. We're not. Our policy was, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. What we're trying to do is to make the charter more like what it can be under modern law. Back when the charter was first adopted, it was adopted the same way that all other city charters were adopted at the time, which was by special law, local law, adopted by the legislature. And at that time, each local government, each city, its powers were as set forth in its charter, and you had a bunch of different powers. Well, the legislature adopted Home Rule in 1973, and that had the effect of converting most charter provisions to ordinances. And with five exceptions, we'll talk about in a little bit, changing them so that making it easy to change them so that the city council can change them on its own without a referendum. Because it's in essence just part of the code, there's some confusion as to what's in the charter and what's in the code, because it's really all in the code. And what we started out doing was looking at this and saying, okay, if we were going to do a charter now, what would be in the charter? And it would be a lot less than what's in our current charter, because there's a whole bunch of stuff in there that was necessary before Home Rule, because you had to have the authorization to do it. Things like financing, pensions, things that now are dealt with either in general law or that the local government can do pursuant to Home Rule. And we actually, I talked to MuniCode about this to see what their philosophy was when they helped new communities draft charters, and it's exactly as it turns out is what we were hoping to do. She said you only ought to have things in your charter that you can't change by a local government alone, things that deal with your structure of government, how they're elected, limitations on the authority of it, things like you would kind of expect to find in a state or federal constitution. And then she said everything else ought to be dealt with in your ordinances, like under our state and federal models, everything that's not in the constitution is dealt with in statutes. And so we didn't want to make wholesale changes. We wanted to shorten it, but we also wanted to go through there, and where there is something that was broken and needed fixing, like the elections process, maybe, it's up to y'all to determine whether it is or not, suggest possible changes to it. The final area that we were dealing with is to deal with things that had been preempted by state statute or otherwise affected so that we could not, so that the charter provision could not survive. And what I'm going to do, after I get the correct document over here, I got the wrong one, is call up on my computer the changes that we're going to propose. The staff's recommending, and then you guys are going to decide whether to proceed with. Okay. What I've done is I've highlighted in yellow, not that these are the most important things, but rather because I want to give you an example of the types of changes that we focused on. We looked at every section of the code. John and Ty solicited comment from every department that was pertinent to it. We checked with the pension lawyers, we checked with the bond lawyers, and then we sat down and went through their recommendations and came up with these suggestions. This first group of changes, actually, when you look in the charter, you think you're looking at our charter, but you're really not. You see a lot of things in there that said that MuniCode's deleted this because it's not necessary. they took out stuff that put in our book that they didn't think was appropriate anymore because of the Home Rule Act. Well, we're going to put it all back in, formally take out the stuff that y'all think doesn't belong. So some of this is a housekeeping thing of putting back in the charter stuff that Muni Code on its own, without any action by us, took out. The next change is a change that staff recommended. This deals with the police powers extend to city property and facilities beyond city limits. Staff recommended it because it's not necessary, but unfortunately, because it does deal with extraterritorial powers, we can't change it except by the legislature. So that's just a second example of a type of thing. The third example of something we're looking at, a change we're recommending, are things that are superseded by statute, where you've got a statute that says this is how you do it, and you can't do it locally such that the statute preempts it, or such that a local ordinance is not necessary. We're proposing that those things be deleted. And this is one that's expressly covered by statute. What it says is when you annex property, you don't reduce somebody's homestead. Okay, we're going to skip over the blue for now because they deal with elections, and we're going to come back and deal with those. Okay, the next, row 24, is a substantive change. And when we were reviewing the charter, we found an issue with this and also section 3.03. To understand this one, we really need to look at 3.03 first. So I'm going to skip down here, and I'm going to read you what the change is. Subsection B, it deals with the duties of the mayor. The mayors of the city shall, B, have charge and control of the police department of the city, which we're leaving alone, but we're recommending the next language be changed. It says, and be responsible for the enforcement of all ordinances of the city not relating to the operation of the public utilities. In other words, under our code, the mayor's responsible, under our charter, the mayor's responsible for the enforcement of ordinances of the city other than those dealing with utility. Now, as you know, and as the mayor agrees, and as OPD agrees, neither the mayor nor the police department have anything to do with the enforcement of a large group of other ordinance sections, including the building permit process, things that we've assigned to code board, enforcement of zoning regulations, platting violations. There's a whole bunch of things that our actual operation of government does not put the mayor in charge of, nor would the mayor be a very good person to enforce them. And so what we're proposing here is that the phrase, and be responsible for the enforcement of all ordinances of the city not related to the operation of public utilities, be deleted, and instead just leave him in charge of the control of the police department. And then once we change that, in 3.03, we go back to 2.08, which is related to it. And it used to say, the mayor shall give all orders and instructions in regard to the enforcement of the city ordinances to the chief of police and all policemen, blah, blah, blah. I talked to the police chief. He doesn't want to enforce the code board stuff either, or the building department. And so we would delete the provision that talks about them enforcing all city ordinances. We would also propose to delete the last sentence. It says, the city council shall have the power further to provide for the appointment of special policemen. We checked, and we don't think y'all have ever done it. And if you're not doing it, then there's no reason to provide for you to do it. So we're recommending that sentence be deleted as well. Now, if you look over...
Can I ask a question?
Yes, ma'am.
Is there any indication in the charter or anywhere why we might at any point...
No, ma'am, we thought that perhaps it had to do with... with perhaps a situation where the city council members were not showing up for meetings, and perhaps the city council president needed to appoint a special policeman to go round them up and bring them in. That's the only, that happened.
Well, I don't know, that sounds kind of like fun.
That happened in, was it Pennsylvania or Ohio, where they had the last year, or Wisconsin, I'm sorry, it happened in Wisconsin. And yet, there's no provision for that in here.
Right.
So we couldn't see the need for, there's no other mention of special policemen in the city charter.
Okay, all right.
So we don't know what they would do if you did appoint them.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Now, if you notice on each of these columns, we also included whether a referendum is required. That does require a referendum. In the memo that I sent to you, you see that one of the things that requires a referendum is the distribution of powers among elected officers or changing the form of government. This does affect the powers of the mayor. It also affects the powers of city council. So that would require a referendum. And we're going to talk about how we propose to do the referendums in a little bit. The next change is just another example of the type of changes that we're making. This is a provision of the charter that permits the city to make investigations and provides a penalty for failing to obey a lawful order issued by the city council in connection with that investigation. And that penalty is inconsistent with state law. So we're proposing to delete the penalty provision.
Okay.
Continuing on, this section 2.13 deals with the procedure for adopting ordinances. We are going to delete, we propose to delete the section, subsection A, because it's superseded by statute. Florida statutes talk about how municipalities adopt ordinances, and they talk about the form that they have to be in. A deals with the form, and so we are proposing to delete that. We're also proposing to remove the requirement that ordinances be adopted by sections. You'll recall we had a discussion on that a couple of months ago, where we were actually wanting to adopt an ordinance by section.
And, was that the panhandling ordinance?
Yes, it was.
Okay.
And at the conclusion of it, I said, hey, this is kind of cumbersome. Do y'all want to get rid of the requirement that we adopt them by section? In my recollection, and Ty, you've been here longer than I have, that's the only time that I've ever seen city council not move to waive the requirement that adoptions by sections on second reading be waived. In other words, every time y'all make a motion to adopt an ordinance, you always say adoptions by sections on second reading be waived. Well, if we're going to waive it all the time, we might as well not have it. So we're suggesting that requirement be removed. There's also redundant language in here that copies of the ordinance be distributed. That's not necessary. And also, we're proposing to establish a deadline for overturning a veto. Right now, there is no deadline for overturning a veto. So what could happen is a mayor could veto an ordinance, council could adopt an ordinance, a mayor could veto an ordinance, and 2 years later, a city council person moves to overturn the veto. And that's not a good practice because things could have changed in any time frame. I mean, you could have actually a different city council then. And so we're proposing that there actually be established a deadline for overturning a veto, so that if a council person wants to overturn the veto, he or she has to make a motion to do so within a time period. I think we'd suggest to John 2 months or something like that, Mr. Musler.
Have you researched with other governing bodies what their time limits are?
Yes, almost all of them. We haven't looked at the time limits, but all of them have one. I can't remember what it is.
I'd just be interested in hearing what that is.
Yeah, it's usually pretty quick. And there's actually been times where the city has had this come up and the city council and the mayor were both fine in letting the time period run. So we don't want to make it too quick. I think it was only, what was it called with the children in the bars? No, the young adults in the bars, where the mayor had vetoed something, but y'all were working on trying to work something out. I don't remember where it was, but the mayor had vetoed it and council actually wanted to let it ride for a while. But we're suggesting that there be a time frame for acting on it so that we're more like the other governments that have these procedures. We'll look at what their time frames are, Mr. Musley, but I think we talked about 60 days. Continuing on, there's a charter provision for the city council to appoint a city public affairs officer. To my knowledge, y'all haven't done so. There doesn't appear to be any necessity of that position. If you want the city to hire somebody, you could budget it and request the city manager to hire somebody. But since you're not doing it, since you don't have one, we thought that that's a provision that shouldn't be in the charter. And that does affect your powers, though, so once again, that requires a referendum. 3.03, we've already talked about. it says it just leaves the mayor in charge of the police department, not for the enforcement of all ordinances. Section 3.04 of the charter. This is duplicated in section 252 of the city code and therefore not necessary in the city charter. I believe it has to do with dual office holding. I don't remember. That's one of those that Muni Code actually left out of the book. The next is section 3.05, which deals with vacancies in office. We're going to talk about that in the elections. Okay, here's one of the wholesale changes that we're proposing to make. Article Roman numeral 6 deals with financial procedures. It has a number of provisions in it, which I don't see Mr. Leggy here, but almost all of which are duplicated in the city code. And thus we're proposing to delete that from the charter and leave it in the city code. In a similar vein, we've got Article Roman numeral 7 that deals with planning. Now, on a non-controversial thing, the city charter provides that there will be a planning director. Now, there is a planning director, but we don't think that needs to be in the charter. In other words, the federal constitution doesn't say there's going to be a Department of Defense. That's dealt with in the statutes. So we don't think that the city charter needs to say that there needs to be a planning director. Similarly, with the Planning and Zoning Commission and the Board of Adjustment, those are all dealt with in the city code. And the city code goes in much more detail than does the city charter concerning what the PNZ does and what the Board of Adjustment does. Almost everything that's in the charter that deals with these two bodies is also in the code. And we think that those are things that could and should be dealt with in the city code as they currently are and are not necessary to be in the charter. Article Roman numeral 8 deals with elections. We'll come back to it. Article Roman numeral 9 deals with the issuance of general obligation bonds. This is totally dealt with by statute now. It's not effective because it's preempted by the statutes, and it's not necessary. Because under home rule, if it wasn't dealt with in the statutes, y'all would have that ability anyway. Article 10, dealing with public utilities. We're proposing mainly housekeeping stuff in this one. There's two sections that are probably not necessary, 10.01 and 10.03. Those authorize the local government to extend its utilities outside of the city limits. That's permitted under Chapter 180 Florida statutes. We think that it's still a good idea to keep it in the charter because we currently don't have a specific Chapter 180 ordinance, and so that we ought to keep this in the charter to make it clear that we do have the ability to provide our water and sewer utilities outside the city limits. Article 11, pensions and annuities. Again, this is dealt with by statute as well as the city's pension code. The pension ordinances are currently kept together, but they're not codified in the city code. And actually, Mr. Leggy and Angel, I believe, are working on actually codifying them. Our pension attorney says there's nothing in the charter that's not adequately dealt with in the code or in Florida law, and therefore we don't think it needs to be in the charter anymore. Hospitals is something that's just, it has no application anymore. It provides for the city to have, I believe, hospital districts. That's a function that under Florida law now is currently occupied by the counties. The city doesn't have a hospital, and I know of no plans that y'all have to eventually have one. And so we propose that this one be deleted. Downtown Development Commission. We also propose that it be deleted and that everything that deals with it be in the code. Most of the stuff that deals with this is actually in the code. The Downtown Development Commission doesn't really operate anymore. There's two things that y'all do for downtown that are involved in the code. One is the downtown CRA. Under that, there has to be a community redevelopment agency that's in charge of the community redevelopment area. And the first one that we had was the downtown. It used to be that the DDC was the community redevelopment agency for the downtown, and it would make recommendations to the city council as the governing body under the CRA statute for final decision. A number of years ago, we changed it so that the city council is the community redevelopment agency for the downtown and the other CRAs, and therefore there's no need for the DDC. The other thing that y'all do downtown is with the separate taxing district, and it's not necessary to have a downtown development commission in order to do that. So we're proposing that that be deleted from here. On this one, we want to make sure that everything that's in the charter that we need in the code is moved to the code, because we haven't done that type of wholesale work. And we want to make sure that the repeal of these charter provisions doesn't interfere with the special taxing district that we have that deals with the taxes and expenditures. So that one we propose to delete them, but we do acknowledge that there's some additional work to do. The next wholesale changes is in Article 14, deletion of the minimum housing code. It's not needed. It's dealt with now in the state statute that provides there is a statewide building code. Local governments aren't permitted to have any of their building codes anymore, and even if they did, we don't need it. The charter under home rule, we have that ability to do it in our code. The next item is 1501. This deals with personal financial interests of council people. This had been preempted by state law, superseded by state law. It tells exactly what you can and you cannot do. So the charter provision is not effective anymore, because the state's made it clear that it deals with the areas of ethics of public officials. Then we propose a whole section be deleted that deals with transition. Back when they adopted the charter, they dealt with stuff that was currently pending. At that time, it's not needed anymore. Everything that was pending there has been resolved. So this one we're proposing be deleted. So in summary, with very few exceptions, and I'm going to hit those again, with very few exceptions, I think these changes are housekeeping. They do not affect the relationship. They don't affect the structure of government. We're not changing from a strong city manager form of government. We're not affecting any powers of the mayor that he actually enforces. We're not enhancing the ability of the city vis-a-vis anybody, or putting any additional restrictions on the ability of the city. We are, however, doing some housekeeping items, particularly in terms of clarifying that the mayor does not enforce all ordinances, removing the special police provision that the city council has, and getting rid of some things in the charter that just aren't needed or are preempted by state law. Any questions on those non-election issues before we proceed? Do you want us to elaborate on any of them? Or anybody have any feedback on any of those? I don't think they're going to be controversial. But we're going to talk at the end of this about those that do require referendums, how to group them together so that if any of them do turn out to be controversial, that they don't bring down the non-controversial ones.
Okay. Is there any questions or comments for Jimmy? Are we in agreement to have the work continue on all of these items? Are there any that anyone wants to see pulled out or have concerns with? Okay, so on those items, we will say continue working.
Okay. Okay, next is the more substantive issues, and this we have a separate memo on dealing with election issues. And on these, before we can actually start drafting anything, we need some guidance from y'all, and I'll see if I can find this one so you can put it up here. Sure. these are things that until y'all give staff some guidance, we don't know what to recommend to y'all. In other words, there can be a whole bunch of different ways to write them, and until y'all tell us the general structure that you want us to do, we don't know how to proceed. The first issue deals with runoff elections, because if it turns out that we no longer have runoff elections, then that will resolve some of the other issues that we've noted under the current election scheme. As y'all know, and as we were reminded of when Mr. Musley ran for election, under our charter, council members and the mayor are elected by a majority vote. If no candidate wins a majority, there's got to be a runoff election. Now, there are very few elections in Florida or federally that are still like that. The U.S. Senate and Congress are elected by plurality vote. Florida governor, Florida legislature, county commissioners are elected by plurality vote. Not majority, no runoffs. The only election that we're aware of that still requires runoffs are school board members and judges. One of the consequences of runoff elections, again, as we noted, is that they can be expensive and complicated. The most recent runoff we had was complicated when one of the candidates tried to withdraw, but it's still a issue. As you're going to see in the rest of the discussion, eliminating runoff elections will resolve many of the other issues with the city elections. And what I'm going to do first is kind of go through these and then come back and let y'all pick out the options on each of them. We've got options for dealing with this one. We eliminate the runoff elections for all elections, provide for city council members, should be, and the mayor, to be elected by plurality of votes cast. Or we keep the majority requirement for regular elections, but provide that special elections to fill vacancies would be decided by plurality. That would eliminate the runoff elections for special elections. Or you keep the status quo, continue to have majority requirement for all of them. The next issue that we noted in the election process is vacancies and special elections. There's a problem with the timing of how we do these. Under our charter, to fill vacancies in the mayor or council, you have an election within 120 days. Excuse me. If the vacancy occurs within 120 days before the date of the next regular election, then you have to have a special election. And the special elections can take up to 6 months. I think that's what we found out with filling Mr. Musley's seat. The special elections stand alone, so their expense is not split among different offices. In addition, there's a very small voter turnout. Mr. Musley, what was the turnout in yours, like 12% or something?
No, it was less than 10, right at 10%.
Okay, right at 10%.
About 3,300 people.
And then, of course, when you've got runoff elections with special elections, it's even more expensive and problematic. On this one, there are several options. And I'm going to tell y'all that I didn't think of the option that actually sounds the best, but I'll get to that one in a minute. The first one is one that's been bandied about.
Why do you admit that so freely right at the beginning?
I'm going to give you credit where credit's due. Because I thought the only option is that the city council appoints somebody to fill the position for the vacancy for the remainder of the unexpired term, or a variation on that, city council appoints a replacement who will occupy until the earlier of the remainder of the unexpired term or the next general election. That way council would not appoint anybody who would serve more than a year and a half, 2 years. Right now, if someone dies within 120 days before the next general election, then city council can appoint somebody to fill that vacancy. So this extends that, in essence, either for the remainder of the unexpired term or until the next general election. The next one is the one that actually President Heinbockel came up with in the middle of the night. According to her, she was just sitting around thinking about the city charter.
Actually, if we're giving credit where credit was due, it was my husband's.
Oh, okay. What?
I was reading him the city charter one night.
What he proposed.
Wow.
See, there
that's
you
romantic.
Go. It gets bad, doesn't it?
This saves.
I remember those early days when I cared that much.
If their vacancy occurs in city council, then the mayor serves as a voting member of council or just has the right to vote on council matters. That's, you could say he's going to be a regular council member, or you can just give him the vote. And that happened.
Somewhere a chill just ran up the back of Mayor Gwynn's leg.
Well, let me tell you, I want to also just say why this, what the idea from that came from is that if there's a vacancy in the mayor's office,
yeah,
the president of council becomes the mayor,
yes,
to fill,
right,
that term. So this is kind of a reciprocal,
yeah,
of that.
Yes,
situation.
This is a reciprocal of that. And that would exist until the earlier of the remaining then expired term or the next general election. So the mayor would only be voting for, you know, a year and a half.
If the mayor is ultimately appointed to fill an empty seat, can he still cast a veto with an ordinance he's voted on?
I was getting ready to ask that same thing.
Actually, Mr. McLeod asked me that yesterday, and we thought that if y'all did do that, then the mayor should not be permitted. His vote would not count on overturning a veto. Similarly, if the mayor position becomes vacant and the city council president vetoes an ordinance, then his or her vote should not count on overriding the veto. So
is that actually addressed right now?
No, yeah, because right now there's no vacancy. Right now the vacancies,
no,
are always filled.
But you got the situation where if
the president becomes mayor,
right,
but
it's never
that's
happened.
Not addressed.
No.
It's not addressed in the charter.
Yeah, it's never happened. So we've never had it. But that was Mr. McLeod asked that. Mr. Owen now thought of it. We were thinking that probably the best way to do it is just not let that person's vote count.
So how would that, if the mayor,
you'd have to get
vetoed
everybody else's vote. Everybody else.
Well, why would the mayor why would the mayor cast a vote to veto, to overturn a veto that he vetoed?
He never would.
Right.
Well, what would happen the mayor would vote against it as a council person, and then if it still passed, then he would then become the mayor and veto it. But then what you're saying is, if he vetoed that and another council person wanted to bring it back to overturn the veto, he would then no longer be allowed to vote on that item.
Yeah, he's going to always vote to overturn the veto.
So you got to have a 4-0. Then you got to have a 4-0 to overturn.
Yes, that's true.
Mm-hmm. I mean, so what's the difference between 4-0 and 4-1? It really doesn't matter.
It probably doesn't matter, except it avoids the problem of somebody voting in kind of like two capacities.
Right.
Florida has this principle of no dual office holding. And this isn't implicated by that, but it kind of is.
Looks like it would be.
Yeah, and so it just has an additional power that's given to me by the charter. He's not occupying that position. But but anyway, it avoids any question about whether somebody's manipulating it and, you know, just trying to delay things or whatnot. But you're right, Mr. Musley. He's always going to vote to uphold the position that he or she took initially. And so you'd have to have the 4 votes anyway to overturn it. So it's not that big a deal. But because it was asked, that's the suggested,
yeah,
change. So that's a possibility to have the mayor vote until the next general election, and the same thing, have the city council president perform the mayor's duties until the next general election.
And I just want to say one more thing before we... When you read through this, and you know, you kind of put yourself in the situation, and on option one, the city council is appointing a person to fill that position. That is, as a city council person, a position that I would never want to be in, is to appoint someone to fill an empty seat. And the thought on the mayor situation is that this is a person that has been elected by the voters, and they're the same voters that put the council people in their seat, and they maybe not that particular position, but they want that person as a leader in the community. Mm-hmm. And so that's sort of the thought that kind of went behind that that option. Okay. Thank you.
And in fact, of course, under the current scheme, if a vacancy occurred within the 120 days before the next general election, you guys would appoint somebody to fill it.
Do we have to appoint someone, or I mean, if say somebody died 119 days before the next election, could you just say, hey, we're not going to appoint, we're just going to rule as four and
I don't know.
Let the election process take over?
Let me look.
Talking six, seven, eight meetings?
No, you the city y'all council may appoint a person. So you could just refuse to take any action.
So at max, you'd have eight meetings?
Yeah.
At max?
Yeah.
But in any event, those are the choices on the options. Either appoint a person for the remainder of the unexpired term, appoint a person until the next general election, have the mayor vote on council matters or serve as a voting member of council. I think the preference would be just let him vote rather than say he's a voting member of council because of the dual office holding stuff. We need to deal with the veto if we do that. Or the fourth choice is keep the status quo. If you want to continue the current scheme with the special elections, then you would want to keep the status quo. The next issue, if we keep runoffs, we need to tinker with it concerning timing of runoffs. It's kind of a technical issue, but right now there's a conflict between the timing of runoffs and the policy of state law that encourages absentee ballots or runoffs. In essence, we have our runoff elections more quickly than the state absentee law contemplates, and they don't have time to get the absentee ballots to all the military people or the overseas voters under our scheme in order to give them a time to come back. The options to fix this one are, again, we eliminate runoff elections, change timing of runoff elections so they're consistent with the absentee requirements, or maintain the status quo. And there's minor things on publishing and whatnot that we need to fix. If we change the time frames for these, we need to change the time frames for when you take office. That is, if we keep the runoff elections. The next deals with withdrawal of candidates. If you remember, under this last election, Mr. Fiorello tried to withdraw until we read the charter and found out that if he did withdraw, that meant that Mr. Tillander would have been in the race with Mr. Musley, where Mr. Fiorello was trying to save us from having a runoff election, but it would have still required the runoff election. And even worse, if Mr. Tillander had withdrawn in that case, then we would have had to start all over again. It wouldn't have been that Mr. Musley was elected, it would have meant that we had to start all over.
Right.
So that appeared to be a real problem. The options on this one, and by the way, that only applies for withdrawal in special elections. There is no charter provision on withdrawals in general elections. The options are provide that if all candidates except one die or withdraw before a regular special election or runoff, the remaining candidate is deemed elected. Maintain status quo for runoffs, except provide that if all candidates except for one die or withdraw, the remaining candidate is elected. That is, it would have eliminated the situation where if both Mr. Fiorello and Mr. Tillander had withdrawn, we would have had to start all over again to fill Mr. Priester's seat, or we maintain the status quo. The final election issue is if there's a tie vote, then the charter says you have to have an additional election. This could result in additional expense, and also the timing of when the people take office no longer works. Options, Florida law provides for drawing lots or a coin toss. That's one option. Secondly, we maintain the status quo, but we fix the timing provision so that the charter is consistent, that says that if you have to have another election, then you don't take office as quickly as you would, or we just leave the stuff the way it is. So for each of these, we've identified what we think are the major issues, and as to each of them, we've looked at it and thought about it and provided you with what we think are the options for you to consider. Now, y'all can't take, obviously, any formal action here, but you don't really take any formal action on any of this stuff until we present you with an ordinance changing it.
Right.
But you could provide us with some guidance here in terms of what you would like for us to draft to bring back to you.
Would this be a referendum?
All of these would be a referendum. Okay. Should we just start with number one, runoffs?
I thought we would, because if y'all decide not to have runoffs, that eliminates the necessity of quite a bit of it. Or if you decide to keep runoffs, then we continue to have these issues.
Okay.
So the first issue is, do we keep the requirement that council members and the mayor be elected by majority vote, or do we change it temporarily for either general, for either all elections or for just special elections?
I will open it up for discussion.
I like that a candidate gets the majority vote.
Mr. McLeod?
I like plurality.
I like the majority, and I will tell you that, and I appreciate that all, most of the other elections are by plurality. Those, what separates those, however, are that those are partisan offices. And the two that require runoff, which is school board, judges, and city council, are nonpartisan offices. And they almost act as if the primary then becomes sort of the runoff. You know, you have the primary election, and then those are together, and you do the second one. And so that's one of the things that stood out to me on that particular paragraph. And yeah, I would keep the runoffs. Mr. Owen, do you have any?
Yes. I mean, I was a product of a runoff my first go around, but you do have instances where, and I think there was five people. Yours had started out, I think there was five.
Started out, there were four, five, two dropped out.
But, I mean, there is a case where you may have 8 to 10 people running for one seat. And given the turnout that we have, as much as we would want to beg people to come be a part of the process and do everything, our average is what it is. You get about an 8 to 10% turnout. So, theoretically, if you get 8, 10 people running, and you've got, say, 2,500 or 3,000 people, you know, somebody can win a seat with 300 votes, 350 votes. And obviously, the one thing that I'm looking here, just the word, this is a sidebar. The word scheme, what do you think of when you see scheme? Because I got it up on Webster's Dictionary right here.
You think of someone who is scheming.
Yeah. Right, a plan or program of action, especially a crafty or secret one.
No.
But that's just neither here nor there. We're paying good money for that too, Jimmy, I'm sure. But I digress. You could have, and I just think the runoffs, and I'm with you on the runoffs, if the 8 gets whittled down to 2, and then, you know, be it 2 weeks, be it 3 weeks, be it 3 months, whatever the runoff election is, again, you get a little bit, it just gets centered in on where you have in at least an awareness of the community that the 5 or 6 or 7 or 10 has been whittled down to 2. And right. So and then there's a little bit more education process. I'm sure, Jay, as you went and saw, because I mean, I was a part of it, you kind of come through that first wave, and then, you know, you're making the rounds to the Elks clubs and the you know, the all of the speaking engagements, things that
it's
you do.
It's a good process.
It continues to hone in, and I think helps elevate the city and helps elevate what's going on at the city. So in the general election, yes. Now, as far as to the situation like we encountered here in the middle of a term, when you get down to these time crunch kind of things, I can see where plurality makes sense. I mean, that just
for a special election.
For a special election,
here's
because
where
it could fall. You know, I mean, it could fall. I mean, here we're in September right now, so we've got what, three of us are up. You know, so let's say, you know, God forbid something happens here in the next 90 days before Christmas, and all of a sudden we're sitting here. Then here we go with Angela, the whole process, and it's an election, and say 3 or 4 people show up. You stretch that out, and then all of a sudden somebody's going to serve for, what, 2 or 3 months? I mean, so it could be, it makes sense to me, in the event of a special election, come one, come all, make whatever happen until the winner goes to spoils, and you move on. The general election makes sense for a runoff.
But as Susie spoke earlier, she would never want to have to appoint a council member.
Oh, absolutely not.
I would never want to serve under any different election rules than the rest of you guys were elected on. In other words, I wouldn't want to be elected under a plurality but have everybody else elected as a majority in a general election. I think the elections, they ought to be the same both ways. I understood it took another 60 days. Yeah. Just my thoughts. I understand where you're coming from, though. I certainly understand.
The I was going to say, the public are going to be mad either way. I mean, honestly, because you, if you sit, and then here's the thing, if you go and you say, well, let's pick somebody, all right? So, and then I don't even know how you do that, because you've only got four.
Right.
So, I mean, it could be two on two, and,
yeah,
you know, I want John, no, well, I want Jill, any kind of deal. I mean, then you just, what, then you go to the flip the coin. But if you sit there and you say you do that, because when we did go through the process, which we all, I can remember us saying, I want the voters to decide this, right? So, and here it comes. I wasted $60,000 for election. Why don't you just pick somebody? All right, well, you pick somebody. Oh, I didn't get to vote. How come y'all are making decisions for me?
Right.
You're damn if you, damn if you don't. Either way on that. So that's just kind of, I just think from the timing aspect. And again, I base it in this, and maybe this will get printed. Maybe this will make a lot of people mad, which apparently they get real good at. Maybe it'll spur some people to actually show up and vote. You know, because we sit there and we have these runoffs, and just a lot of people, I mean, either they don't care, or they're just sympathetic or apathetic or whatever. They just, you know, it would be nice to know that you're going to have 20,000. We got, what, 30,000 registered?
We have over 30,000 registered voters.
We have 32,000
registered voters.
And we got to, you got to beg and plead to get, you know, 25 people, you know, 2,500 people show up.
Brian could probably sell this better. When I was running, I researched it a little bit. I think Susie's election, where you were elected, you had about 4,200 to 4,300. I think that was the high point in the last elections that I looked at. And I looked at it, downloaded it in Excel, slicing and dicing and trying to figure out, because I kept thinking, you know, if you could reach people that don't vote and get them out to vote, maybe you could, but you can't. They just, you're right, Daniel. You got, in this city, 3,500 people to 4,000 people are going to vote, and that's it.
That's why I went the route of trying to get rid of ducks. Maybe that'll incite people to come out and vote, get rid of that bastard.
But, I mean, Mr. McCloud.
Okay, well, I realize the three of you guys were the products of, at one point or another, in a runoff election.
Yeah, you had it easy, man. You just had to show up and pay $42 and you're in.
No, I was either trounced or unopposed. So I'm a little different. But for me, it boils down to runoff elections are expensive. And but at some point,
it's a quick $60,000.
We, yeah.
Was it 60? 50
no,
to 60?
50
on top of the regular scheduled election. So, you know, we get in a situation where you get, God forbid, somebody was killed in a car accident, and then, you know, 6 months later somebody dies of a heart attack, you know. We got an ongoing bill here. It can get very expensive. I mean, I think we have to look at that. I would at least like to do something about the special election when, you know, when Jay was elected, at least that, from my perspective. I think it is expensive.
And
jump in, Brian.
I'm probably the only one with.
No, I was going to say I could, and I think for the special elections, you make a good point that, you know, we're here trying to work, and then this is going on, and it's on and on and on, and if you did a plurality for the special election and did the runoff for the general election, it does keep things. When you're doing a runoff, when we're doing a general election, we plan for the runoff. You know, we that's calculated into the timing that there's going to be a runoff, and then those people are going to get sworn into office. And the business of the city council keeps going, and with a full council. In the event of a special election, that is an interruption to the business of the council and the regular operating of the council. And I can see that that is. The plurality can be.
Take any kind of hot topic item that we've got. So we go into this phase of, all right, we want to make sure we have this majority of vote and all this other stuff. And as we see, it's a 6-month process. Well, I mean, let's just throw it out there. Let's say there's an American Fresh Farms, or let's say there's a racetrack. Is it going to be red, or is it going to be pink, or is it going to be blue? I don't know. I mean, the fact is, you know, racetrack cares. They're trying to operate
right,
business.
Right.
They're trying to move on. And the neighbors out there and the residents care about it. They're trying to move on. And American Fresh Farms is trying to understand and trying to move on.
Right.
And so we're over here trying to save $50,000 this election and feel like we're all doing good when you may need that fifth vote because there's a bigger issue. And so there's the, you know, is it, you know, American Fresh Farms, what, 30 million? And we're talking about all these millions of dollars of things right there. And so it's 2-2, all right? So y'all two are against, and we're for, and man, aren't we feeling good because we got six more months to wait till we can finally get the fifth person up here to do this, and you're completely stalling yeah. the city of Ocala.
It does.
And what's really going on? And so, quick election, you know, there's five people to show up, Jay Mosley wins. Jay, what do you think about American Fresh Farms? I know you jump, you know, but I mean, it's a great example because it's just fresh, because it's just happened.
You're exactly right.
Right? So, you know, jump on in, the water's fine, Jay. What do you think about American Fresh Farms? You know, boom, we got to get a vote. We got to get business going. I mean, they're just what we're talking about. You're trying to serve a community and get things going, and who knows what the hot ticket, and you, it's just like you don't know. You don't know
right,
what the next big ticket's going to be. So somebody's gone, there's been a death, or they don't know where they live, or who knows what's going on. We got to get somebody up here because we got a lot of business. So have an election. It's $50,000. Two people show up, eight people show up, 20 people show up. The winner's going to get it, move on, let's keep going. And if you do a good job, people, you're going to have a lot more standing in the general election. And if you don't, those other 19 people are going to show up and you have another election. And then you've got that runoff process and people, and it's more zeroed in. And that's just, we forget, you know, like next Tuesday, we got an agenda. There's going to be 6 or 7 pages. Matt needs direction on, you know, this item and this item and this item and this item and this item. And, you know, Ms. Rich is not here today. So in this example of any one of us, it's happened. You know, we miss meetings. There's two twos. What, it just,
right.
it
and
dies.
Then, and during the time that we were had a seat empty, one of us meeting missed a meeting. You're down to three. And then you're like, whoa.
Oh, yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. it really kind of puts you in a bind.
And if I'm correct, it's not like in an instance of three. It takes three votes, correct? It's not a two
That's
versus
correct.
One?
It's quorum's three, and you can have things decided 2-1.
So 2-1 can
yes,
decide?
Sir.
So,
if I could just jump in here, it sounds like there's a consensus for the only one who wants a plurality is Mr. McLeod. There are two people who are considering wanting a plurality for special elections, but a majority for general. If y'all, depending on how y'all resolve the vacancy or special election thing, if you deal with the vacancies so you don't need special elections, then that resolves this issue.
Okay.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So you may want to move.
May
to that,
want to keep
Brian's
moving. Okay, Mr.
You
Creekman.
Accept comment and an option you haven't discussed.
Sure.
And I'll just say quickly up front, I'm a big advocate of the person getting a majority. I won't go an extent on that, but you can look at the political science research and despite the fact that it's done in many cases, a no majority system is an incumbent protection system, because if the people who want the incumbent out have their votes split amongst multiple candidates, they never get rolled into one opposition candidate. It's a system designed to protect who's in office, and I'm very much against it. But I won't go on further about that because you seem to mostly want majority. And I want to throw out an option that you haven't discussed.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not advocating it because, frankly, I haven't thought it through totally myself. I don't know where I personally would have an opinion on it, but since it doesn't seem to be in the mix, I just want to put it on the record in your meeting.
Sure.
Instant runoff voting. I don't know if y'all are familiar with that term. I had run across that acronym in the last few years and actually fairly recently looked up to see what it was. This is the idea where traditionally you go and you cast one vote on an issue in an election, but that's from when we had technology that's much different than we have now. The mm-hmm. idea of instant runoff voting is when you first go to the polls, if you're confronted with multiple candidates, you rank order them. And then you go through an algorithm. If somebody gets a majority, they take office. If nobody gets a majority, I think the process is you kick out the lowest ranked candidate and then take those people's second choice and treat that as their first choice and see if somebody's got a majority. And you go on through that to try to avoid the expense of having an additional logistical whole full
right.
election. So basically the idea is you capture additional information the first time, but
right.
past what you currently get, the first time people go to the polls, and then you conditionally use that information, depending on how people voted, to try to assess who has got majority support without having to go through the whole election process again.
Right.
Once I learned about this, I called up Gary Holland, who's the Assistant General Counsel for the Division of Florida Division of Elections, who I've consulted on issues in the past. Mr. Holland is, and I did some research and found there were isolated cases around the country where instant runoff voting is being done. It's not widespread, but it does exist in places. And it also exists at the national level in other countries. Don't ask me to quote, I think there's a president of a country that's elected this way. Mr. Holland says he's not aware of anything in Florida law that would prevent a municipality in Florida from doing instant runoff voting. He's also not aware of any jurisdiction in Florida that's doing instant runoff voting, but he said they wouldn't necessarily have told us. I, just kicking around the internet, haven't run across anybody doing it. I spoke to Wesley Wilcox, because I had read that there were these scanning systems could be adapted with different software to handle the information requirements. And so I haven't totally researched it, but apparently Mr. Holland says whatever process is used has to be certified. Apparently there are vendors and election systems who go to pay the expense and have the state of Florida certify their systems, according to Mr. Holland. Supervisor of Elections also can legally get election processes certified in Florida. I'm not sitting here with a plan. As I said, I'm not even advocating it. I just want to throw it out as something that is an option, and in case you wanted to research it further. One thing, thought that I've had as an advocate of runoff elections is, and I could point to one county race where it's going on because I've dealt with it directly. You have sometimes a different dynamic when you have multiple candidates. Mm-hmm. If you have multiple candidates and there's negative information about an opponent, then they all frankly will stand there and look at each other and say, well, why don't you bring it up? Because they don't want to be the one to bring it up, because they don't want to get in a one-on-one with one and the other candidate or two get to stand over here and say, well, I'm not part of all that mess.
Right.
So I could tell you that there's information that should have come out in the past county election that did not come out because it was in the hands of multiple opponents and nobody wanted to be the one to jump, even though they all go, oh, the voters ought to know that. But I don't want to be the one that's accused of negative campaigning while other people stand over here and think, well, my hands are clean, I'm a nice guy.
Right.
So there is an argument that I guess if you carried forward with from four candidates or three or whatever to a one-on-one, there could be a different dynamic and you wouldn't necessarily be guaranteed that the IRV process,
right,
where people cast their votes based on the information available at that stage would yield you the same candidate you would end up with if you ran a full runoff. Somebody would have to think that through. I don't know, but it obviously does avoid the expense of a full
second
go-round.
Yeah. Thank you.
I think that's all I know about it.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. So we'll move on to vacancies and special elections. All right.
And here's your options here. If a vacancy occurs, City Council appoints somebody to fill the whole unexpired term. The next is, if a vacancy occurs, City Council appoints a replacement who is in the office until the earlier of the remaining of the unexpired term or the next general election, so you don't have somebody serving for more than, say, a year and a half. The third is the Dr. Heinbachel suggestion, which is the mayor gets to vote. And by the same token, the City Council president, even beyond 120 days, would serve his duties.
Let me ask you this, Jimmy. Say we chose that one right there, the 2.5.3, and say that was in existence when Mr. Priester was mm-hmm, removed from council. Would Mayor Gwynn have been permitted to vote at the next meeting, and he would vote until there was a special election?
This would eliminate the special elections.
Okay. Well, could you do this? Could you still have the special election, but have the best of both worlds? Have the mayor vote until the special election can be held. And that way, city business can go on. The populace, the citizens, get to choose who's going to fill that spot.
Yeah.
Sure. Now we've got the Heinbockel Musley amendment or revision. The Musley revision to the Heinbockel scheme.
With a second from Gwen.
We all start disappearing.
But see, well, again, that brings back in the veto thing, right? Again, because you could have a hot topic button that comes through, and I mean, it's not a big deal. Well, I'll say it's not a big deal. It's,
well, I mean, you still got to have four other people. The four other people who were not the mayor would have to stand in unison to say, no, we're going to overturn that veto.
Right. And all of these situations are sort of once in a blue moon type.
No. And in the last 2 years, we've had a lot of blue moons.
We've had a lot of blue moons in the last couple of years.
Blue moons. Every time I look outside, there's a blue moon. It's like those 100-year storms we get about every 4 days.
Right, we get them every other week.
Well, I guess from my standpoint, I would prefer to see 2.5.3, or 3, and let him fill that term until the next scheduled election.
And eliminate the special election?
Correct. Again, I'm coming at it from a more of a financial money-saving issue for me.
Hold on a second. That would be within 6 months, correct?
No.
Well, it could be as much as,
one year and 11
months. Yeah, almost, just under 2 years.
Somebody were to pass away right after he gets elected or resign, then you would have this situation for the rest of the term.
Unless you did the Musley revision, which is have the mayor vote until the special election.
If you go 2 years.
That's too long.
That's way too long for mayor, because that's way too long.
Well, how long should it be?
I think till
as quick as you can get up and running on a.
You get a special election.
Special election and have the plurality of vote, regardless if it's 2 or 20.
Right.
Go and move on.
Yeah.
Get somebody in quick, because again, you're encumbering business.
I just don't want to see us have a special election too close to a term, and then next thing you know, we get to have.
We can change the.
We can change the
120
the
days
120
to say 180 days or. 210 days,
whatever.
But I mean, I think having the mayor vote for 2 years is just too long. But I can see your point. If it's 4 months out, then can you live with that? Yes.
Or even 8. Yeah. If it's 8 months out, you have a special election, which takes, you've had the special election, and you've got 8 months left for the next election.
So if we have a special election and we do it as a plurality, what is that time frame? How much time does that take?
3 months.
Well, it takes 3 months because you got the 45 days for the ballots to go out. You got the qualifying time. It takes you 75 days.
When it happens.
Your qualifying for my elections was December 15th, right?
The issue came in when we ran into, they already had elections scheduled, and that's what pushed it out. So it basically depends on what they
on
have
what, when
going
it happens.
On.
Yeah.
Yeah, when it happens.
And if they tie.
But it's let's just. It could be the shortest amount of time. Say there's no delays, there's no problems whatsoever, and there's a vacancy. We've got to have a special election. What is the shortest amount of time that could take place from the vacancy to the election? Is that 3 months?
I was say about 3 years.
I think it's between 2.5 and 3 months.
Okay.
With absentee ballots.
Yeah.
So, and then it can go, your process took 6 months?
Qualifying started on December 15th, and I was finally elected on April 24th.
So, sometime. That was actually
five
a runoff.
Months.
That was with the runoff.
That was with the runoff.
So if I'd have been elected in the first,
3 to 5 months.
That'd have been February.
So it's 120 days.
Yeah.
So if we did the mayor voting until such time as we can have a special election, we're looking at 3 to 5 months.
But if you go with just plurality, it'll just be 3 months.
Right.
Right.
Unless there's a glitch or whatever and the timing issue at the Supervisor of Elections office. So it could be, you know, it could be more than 3, but probably not 5 because...
Correct.
Okay.
Do we need to have...
Mr. McLeod?
Yeah, I guess... do you have an election next year?
Yes.
Okay. For instance, something happened to your seat and you had to resign in January, February. So okay. Now we've got a, what, 3 month period of time, correct?
Correct.
So that puts us into somewhere March, April, or May.
Right.
Right? So now we have a newly elected person by special election, March, April, May. They got to turn around and file papers.
Correct.
Immediately, the day they win the election.
That's correct.
That's where I have the issue. I if we could make that period of time where he takes, whether it's a year or whatever, anything inside of a year that the mayor would stay in that position until the next election. Because it doesn't make a lot of sense to me to do all that and then turn around and have to file papers the day he wins the election for the first one.
I'm going to bet nobody runs against him.
Well,
but I mean that's irrelevant. That's irrelevant. Yeah. I'm just.
Or he may sit there. I would bet we wouldn't have had a fight. My God, what did I get into? I'm getting out of here.
I'm not running for this again.
Just to clarify, it looks like Mr. Priester lost his seat in early December, and the election was February 28th.
Yes.
Right.
And then the runoff was in April.
And the runoff was actually.
Yeah. So I mean, it really is a. It's 90 days.
Yeah, 90 days.
Okay, I was going from when the qualifying started, not from when we left.
Right.
Forgot right. about that. You're right, it was 2 weeks or so.
Okay. So, what do we think?
I would limit the mayor's voting as much as possible.
Yes, I agree with that.
So whatever that smallest amount of window or the whatever that window needs, I would limit that.
So you're advocating the special election and the mayor filling in just for a short time until we can get the special election.
Correct. Yes.
Going and for that to be as short as possible.
But if it is what you had said, like we said, if it's within 90 days of the general election.
Right.
You know, I mean, he is obviously just going to serve. I mean,
well, I would extend it all the way out within 180 days.
120, all right, then 120. So if the vacated seat happens within 120 days of an election, the mayor just rides that vote out until the election.
Would you consider moving that to 180 days just so, because that would say, I mean, for the extra 60 days, you're spending $50,000 to elect someone.
That's 6 months.
Just so the mayor only votes 120 instead of 180.
So
180 days.
Are you comfortable with that?
No, he's not.
Well, I'm comfortable with the concept. I just want more time so we don't run into the scenario I talked about.
Right, right.
I'm not going to oppose it because it's better than the present system. But
I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings, but again, I'm good at that. But sometimes we talked about some people may vote for a mayor because he can't vote.
Yeah.
And that is true. Yeah. But we're talking scenarios where there's a reason why somebody's missing up here. And so we much prefer to conduct business with 5.
Jimmy, your angel, how many special elections has the city had over the last?
Oh, we looked that up.
We did.
It wasn't many, it was more than we thought.
Oh, well?
Yeah.
Angel, what would have happened if Mr. Musley had a tie?
It was a tie?
Mm-hmm.
Have
to
have
start
it over.
Yeah. That's the last thing here is we want to change that to a coin toss or swords or guns or something, anything to avoid another election.
How about a friendly nine-hole match?
There you go.
What'd he say?
I said, how about a friendly nine-hole match at Muni?
Longest drive? A math quiz.
Yeah, there you go.
I don't know. You don't know how to play golf under pressure.
Some obscure contest.
Let's come up with some kind of test. Hey, I know what. Let's do the test that you have to take for new citizens coming into the country, like the history test.
That'd be embarrassing.
That'd be cool.
That may be embarrassing to the winner, though, Ms. Heimbuckle.
There you go.
You want a good beer bet? Name all 50 states, write them down within 8 minutes. You'll be surprised.
I bet I could do that better than I could to take the exam.
We got 8 minutes left. See if you, how many states you can come up with.
Right, I'm now working here.
Timing of runoffs.
Okay, so wait a minute. On that, it sounds like there's a somewhat of a consensus, except for Mr. McLeod, that it would be like 2.5.3, except the mayor would only get to vote until the next special election.
Yes.
And if the vacancy occurs within 180 days of the next general election, then there's not going to be a special election, and you just have the mayor voting in the meantime.
And the mayor can fill that seat, yes.
Yeah.
Mr. Attorney?
Or actually not fill the seat, but has the right to vote.
Right to vote.
If a second vacancy occurred during that same period of time, you still have a special election, though, right?
Come on.
Way to go, John.
Hush, John, hush.
What do we do if there's a second vacancy? Then I think obviously the mayor can't vote twice.
No.
So I think we're just going to be short.
We'll be short one. Okay, timing of runoffs. Okay,
this is mainly a housekeeping matter, but let's go back. Let's go back to item one, though, because are we going to keep the runoff elections for special elections? Y'all were.
No, we're doing the. I believe what we had agreed.
Actually, Mr. Musley, I thought still was wanting to have runoffs for special elections.
Yeah, but I understand that.
So you're okay with that one?
Yeah, going to
a general election, yes. Yeah. A special election,
right?
The business needs to keep it. I mean, that's why we put the mayor in, for letting the mayor vote, because you got to keep
business moving.
John, I do appreciate you bringing that up, though, because we need to provide for that.
Jimmy, if the way they voted, was the mayor still would be able to veto?
Yes, he could veto, but her vote doesn't count on overturning the veto, which is Mr. Musick pointed out, it's really not that big a deal.
Two vacancies,
never. That's correct. I'm not sure you could under the current.
I don't think you could under, yeah.
Okay.
Still need the 4-5.
Are we ready to
Okay,
move
continuing on.
Okay.
The next issue is the timing of runoffs. This is primarily a housekeeping item. Do we keep the scheme, since we're not eliminating runoffs, do we change it so it works with the military and overseas absentee voters?
Yeah.
Or do we just keep the current time?
I
think we need to change it.
To make those changes.
Make it like
timing changes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Our election process?
Yeah, we don't have an election scheme around here.
Sorry. I use that phrase in the non-pejorative sense.
Webster's doesn't know.
What does he know? Okay, withdrawal of candidates.
Before you move on, Jimmy,
yes,
I have to go back just for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
Go back to that situation where the mayor serving as a council member, he casts his veto, and then, of course, can't vote in the override of the veto. In that case, is it a 4/5 or 3/4?
4. It's currently four under the charter.
Right, but in that case, you only got 4 council members that are
right.
serving to
yes.
cast an override.
And they all have to vote to overturn it.
You understand my point? You want to stay at the
yes.
4? Okay.
Yeah.
Normally, vetoes are on a 3-2, which it's a divisive issue.
Under the current code, you had to have or the current charter.
There's 5-0 veto.
It's the Constitution. You're somewhere in the line,
okay.
Matt.
What's that?
It's like the Constitution. You're somewhere in the line here. Secretary
yeah, no
of
more
Defense.
Comments from you or John.
The current thing is 4/5 vote of the council, which if you had If you only had a four-person council, you wouldn't get it with three. Three or four is less than four-fifths.
Right.
But you only have, in this case,
I understand.
You only have four council members.
Right. If they want to change it to three-fourths, they can.
I'll leave it the way it is.
I don't want to. Okay. Timing, we're going to change.
Timing, we're going to change. Okay, now let's talk about withdrawal of candidates.
Okay.
Your options are, A, if everyone withdraws, then the last remaining person standing is elected.
That's for runoffs.
Or a different rule for runoffs. Keep the current thing for runoffs, but provide for general elections that the last man standing is elected. I didn't really see the need for a different rule for runoffs in general and regular elections.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, it seemed like if everyone withdraws in either case, that you'd have the same rule, but I figured I'd give you that choice.
So what you're saying is if we take 4.3.1, you could have a situation where the guy came in third being elected if candidate number one and two resign.
Yes.
I mean, I can't see that happening, but God, that would really be bad if it did.
Perhaps that's why the Founding Fathers said if that happens, you have a new election, you start all over again.
There's something to be said for that.
The problem is, Mr. Massey, is we hadn't been reading the charter that night.
Yeah.
When Mr. Fiorello tried to withdraw, then
I had no idea.
Then you would have had Mr. Tillen in the race, and what if he showed up at the meeting too and we hadn't been reading the charter and he'd have withdrawn, and then the next day Mr. Gilligan has to call Angel and said, ooh, we didn't know this, but now we gotta start all over again.
I mean I think we all learned a lot from that, but having an individual who came in third in an election get it handed to them simply because, you know, candidate one, for whatever reason, decides, you know what, I wanted this, came in first, but, you know, I don't want to go through with it. I don't know. I'd rather see you craft something that says if the candidate that gathers the most votes in a runoff election, if he's the last man standing,
okay,
then he's deemed elected.
What about for general elections, though?
General elections.
If three people qualify and then two withdraw, what happens?
Right now, what's...
I'm sorry, the first go-round of elections, not general elections. Either a general election or a special election, not a runoff. But what would your scenario be for three people qualify but two withdraw?
Before or after the election?
Yeah, before or after.
Before the election.
Before the election.
Well, before the election,
then it's just an unopposed.
Then it's an unopposed seat.
Okay.
Right. Right.
The current code actually provides that.
Yeah.
It only has this odd rule for runoffs.
Yeah.
So if we only do the runoffs, then the general election.
Yes.
Yeah,
then the chance of this happening is even more rare.
This only general election because we're going to go to the plurality on the special election. That language of special election to be removed.
There won't be any runoffs for special elections.
Right.
Correct.
So actually this will resolve itself. The rule will no longer be in the charter. Except for runoffs for general elections, then it will be in the charter.
Right.
Okay.
And in a runoff, it's only two. So in
right.
one instance, if one drops out,
right.
if the lead vote getter drops out, there's not a third.
There's not a third.
There's,
okay.
there's
third
only
person.
Two. So you have 10 people show up for 10 people show up for general election, and nobody gets a majority. So now you've got one and two go into a runoff. So a week before the runoff election, the one vote getter, number one says I'm out for whatever reason. Then
right.
you're getting the second.
Okay, and in the instance where number one and number two both, for whatever reason, resign, then you start all over again, correct?
Then you start over.
Okay.
Okay, so if in a runoff, if the number two person withdraws, then the number one person is elected?
Or vice versa.
If there is
If the number one withdraws, then you still would have the number two person elected?
In a runoff, if there is a withdrawal, the remaining candidate
is elected.
Is duly elected.
Because the way we're thinking right now is every other candidate's been eliminated. So there is no need to go to candidate 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. They're out. Okay.
Because of the runoff.
Candidate 1 or 2 resigns, the other candidate's elected.
Okay.
Now, again, that's not what our founding fathers had in mind.
But all things are different, but I'll give you an example in mind. 2001, I think there was five of us, if I remember. But the top three, there was 100 votes separated all three of us. There was like 1,100, 1,000, and like 970 or something. So we went into the runoff. There were, even in the general election, there was only like 100 votes separating. So if you get an 8 or 10 person, I mean, obviously the discrepancies there's no way to predict what the discrepancies are. But usually the top two are, you know, I mean, like you saw in yours, it's usually pretty tight.
Yeah.
Are there any other things that we need to address? Jimmy, have we gone through everything?
The last one is the tie votes.
Oh, tie votes. Oh, that's what's going to be the fun one, too.
Oh, man. We either change the timing or leave it the way it is, or draw lots or coin toss, as is done under state law, or golf, math quiz, arm wrestling,
civic
distance of spitting, whatever.
Who's going to toss the coin?
That's why I prefer, I was going to suggest paper, scissors, rock. Doesn't give an advantage to the person who, there's no manipulation. There's no, you don't get to call it.
Yeah, who gets to call the toss?
Right.
We'll look it up and see what it is. Lots is actually fair too, where you put straws of different length in Angel's hand. But I guess the first person there has a little slight either advantage or disadvantage. The paper says rock's actually the best, it seems to me like.
How about two pieces of paper and a hat? One of them is empty.
I could just imagine the headlines in the Star Banner the next day.
Pardon?
I can just imagine the headlines in the Star Banner the next day if you were rock crushing scissors.
Next day, wait till tomorrow.
Is that better than a coin toss?
Neither one is very good.
Then y'all can keep the status quo and have
no
round of elections. If
it's no, we don't. That's a waste of.
I don't know. That's ever happened.
Well, never say never. Who knows?
Rock, paper, scissors, then.
Flip a coin.
Flip a coin?
Flip a coin.
It's the American way.
Too easy to cheat.
I don't have any thoughts or feelings about this item. Honestly don't.
I like the rock, paper, scissors. It would be very unique. It would get a lot of attention.
It would, especially.
Not just locally. Election decided by rock, paper, scissors. There we go. Find your place.
Rock, paper, scissors. One, two,
crap,
three.
I lost.
They're all equally bad
options.
So.
Yeah, there are no good options.
What are we?
No, it's in. It, really, think of it.
Yeah.
In the event of, it becomes it's just such an extremely mathematical, unique situation that I don't say. It's city business and it's serious business and elections are serious business, but it almost becomes, I don't call it comical, but unique, and you just try to make as much out of the situation as you can. So, if it's a dash around City Hall or a 50-yard dash, or, I mean, who the heck knows?
you know, rock, paper, scissors, just it's...
That works.
But at that point, everybody's, it's comical anyway.
Jimmy, is there precedence for this?
I'm unfamiliar with an election being decided by rock, paper, scissors, but I've actually...
Or coin toss, either.
There are coin toss, that's what it's in Florida law. Mm-hmm.
And drawing lots.
Drawing lots.
Yeah.
The problem with the coin toss is it's subject possibly to human manipulation, or at least there's a question of who gets to call it.
Right.
I don't know how they resolve that. The person with the lowest alphabetical letter, how do you get it? Because, you know.
Right, there are details.
Mr. Do rock, paper, scissors.
Do an experiment.
Pardon?
You can do rock, paper, scissors to see who calls the coin toss.
Yeah, you could. We could say that.
Did any of y'all watch the Gator game Saturday?
It was on my
Everybody
television.
Everybody did.
Did you see Will Muschamp's comments after the ESPN reporter went up? Did you see his comments?
No.
He said, coming in here and disappointing this many people is a lot of fun. Oh. And Texas A&M Times, do an experiment with me.
All right.
Rock, paper, scissors. That's going to get an article. And with all due respect, and Brian, appreciate you being here, but who else from the public is here? All right. So the article goes out. Guarantee it. Council's going to decide tie votes with rock, paper, scissors, and just simply watch the input that you start to get from the community. What are you people doing? Well, you know what? We had a workshop. It was duly noticed. You should have been here to speak. Brian, do you have any comments on rock, paper, scissors versus a coin toss?
There was a guy on America's Got Talent a week or two ago who apparently, unless it was physically manipulated, he had Stern fill in colors on a drawing of Stern, and then the guy unveiled where he had pretty much pre-picked the same colors. I'm sure someone's researched the frequency of selections in this rock, paper, scissors game, and people mentalists who do stuff, a lot of it is based on the frequency with which names occur, and they use all kinds of statistical probabilities to gain advantages and things. So I don't know, is there a way to do it in this game? I don't know that it's I don't know, having had a software background, so just have Excel generate a random number.
There you go.
I'm telling you.
Because we can actually somebody would say
just something. Like we're doing.
No, it's in the charter. This is going to require an election to approve it.
Oh, it's going to require then.
Yeah.
Rock, paper, scissors. That.
That's fine. y'all. What are your thoughts? Coin toss.
Uh-huh.
Draw lots.
Coin.
I'm rock, paper, scissors.
Rock, paper, scissors. Come on, Susan.
If I can just.
Y'all can always blame it on me.
If I can
chime
in.
Well, we will anyway. Or you can do it like me and blame it on your wife.
just one word of caution, and I'm going to use an anecdotal story to share this with you. Just this past Sunday, we were signing dishes to one of my two kids. So they said, let's do rock, paper, scissors. And apparently there's an East Coast version and a West Coast version. My son did a West Coast version, my daughter did the East Coast version, and they got another argument about what version's right. So
what are the...
I'm not entirely sure, but there's a difference.
Believe it or not.
So we're going to do the East Coast
version. We'll go with the Republican one.
I had to look this up because you have the same problem when you've got a corporation that's owned 50-50. What do you do to decide things? There's all sorts of ways you can do it. And these guys said they wanted to do it with rock, paper, scissors. So I had to look up to figure out what are the rules, and there is a, I'll have to look for it, but there's a rock, paper, scissors federation or something.
Okay.
And so I'll recite their thing.
That's what we'll
that
do,
should
recite
resolve
their
it.
Rules.
But it's, you know, I love it when Brian's here because he always brings some interesting points. I'm sure it's with heads or tails, it's 50-50. But I bet you that there is some custom where somebody chooses, you know,
the rock
more often or something. Yeah. I got no idea what that is.
All right.
I'll take a look at it. If it looks like it's subject to manipulation, I'll bring it back. Y'all can. Y'all, of course, this is going to be an ordinance. You can always change it.
I can't wait for the letters to get.
We're just anxious for the
email. I know.
So is this all elections are going to be decided by rock, paper, scissors, or just tie votes?
I
lost it.
All right. Anybody else have anything? Any more public comments? Anything else from council members? We're adjourned.
Wait a second. I do. I have one item unrelated to the charter.
Okay.
This is a memo I'm going to read to you from Jeff Halcombe regarding the wholesale water agreement and the potentiality of maybe needing a special meeting this Friday to address the issue. And if you have permission, I'm just going to read this. I think it's very clear. It's better than what I could verbally state it myself. And it quotes, the city, and this is from Jeff Halcombe to me, it says, the city of Marion County entered into a wholesale wastewater and reclaimed interlocal agreement with an effective date of April 17, 2012. The contingency was established under the wholesale agreement for the city and county to enter into separate agreements with Ocala Meadows, the recipient of reclaimed water and wastewater service. Under the original wholesale agreement, city and county were to enter into those agreements by June 16, 2012. And if they did not, they were permitted to terminate the wholesale agreement through July 16, 2012. On July 10, 2012, city and county amended the wholesale agreement by extending the deadline for entering into an agreement with Ocala Meadows to August 15, 2012, and establishing a deadline for terminating the wholesale agreement of September 14, 2012. Like the original wholesale amendment, the amendment provided that the failure to terminate by such letter date would have waived the right to terminate. The city sent Ocala Meadows' attorney a draft agreement on June 4, 2012. Since that time, although I have communicated with Ocala Meadows' engineer on several occasions, the city has received no revisions to the proposed Ocala Meadows agreement. When I realized that the September 14th deadline was coming up, I requested Jimmy Gooding to email and call Ocala Meadows' attorney to advise him of the deadline and inquire as to Ocala Meadows' intent. We have not heard back from Ocala Meadows, however. Further, I do not believe that the county has entered into an agreement with Ocala Meadows. Neither the city nor the county can provide under the wholesale agreement without separate agreements with Ocala Meadows. There is not sufficient time before the September deadline for the city and county to further amend the wholesale agreement to extend the deadlines. Therefore, the only safe action that the city can take is to terminate the wholesale agreement before September 14th. This does not mean that the city does not wish to proceed with the deal. Rather, it means that, at least for the present time, we cannot do so. Therefore, I request that City Council schedule a special meeting at which it authorizes the city manager to deliver a notice under the wholesale agreement terminating it. This action obviously needs to occur on or before September 14th.
Okay, so.
Well, do you even have enough time to get it published?
Yes.
Well, yes, we do.
You do not have to have it published.
What do we need to call a special meeting? It's either the mayor or what?
Yeah, I thought the mayor was going to be here.
Three
council.
We changed that to three, didn't we?
We said that three people announced. Well, somebody took my rules out of the drawer here. Does it have to be an official meeting at which they announce it? Oh, I'm sorry. There's a small one. Does this have the most recent amendment in it? I know that, but is it? Can they make the announcement at a workshop, or does it have to be at a regular meeting?
I think it's a regular meeting.
That's what I'm looking for.
Okay.
I don't know. Let me look.
So we're gonna meet by Friday.
Yeah.
Yeah, the 14th is Friday.
Mayor is.
He's in Tampa.
Yeah, he's out of town, but he's not far. It's just day trip.
Is he coming back tomorrow, or?
Do you know when he's coming back?
I have no clue.
Call what within 24 hours?
Yeah, he will call. I don't. Is he coming back?
I think so. I think he'll be back later today.
Okay, here we go. It's got to be a regular meeting.
Okay,
so
the mayor doesn't need to be. The mayor can just call it.
The mayor can just call it?
Without a meeting, correct?
Actually, the city council president can do it. Or in his absence, the council pro tem. I didn't remember doing that.
Okay, so.
You sure this is right? We'll prepare the necessary documents. I'm looking at what purports to be the current rules.
What time Friday?
Noon hour.
11.
11?
11. That's fine with me. Is that good with you?
Sooner the better.
Aye.
That's fine.
11's good.
Doug Johnson speaking at the Kiwanis Club on Friday. It's kind of morning.
10:30.
It should take all 5 minutes.
Yeah.
11, right?
Yep.
Yep.
Will you look at the, you've got the rules, all I have is a digital copy.
Just an interesting thought while Jimmy's looking that up. In context of the discussion you just had on the charter revisions, does it make sense to authorize the council president to be able to call special meetings?
It looks like we already did that, but we're just not certain if what I've got on my computer is her official form. You got, that's it right there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, hold on just a minute. Keep going. Okay, there we go. The city council president, or in his absence, the president pro tem. Wow. So we'll prepare a document for Ms. Heimbachel to sign. And then we will get, we'll have to give y'all notice.
Okay. Friday, September 14th at 11 a.m.
Done.
Anybody need any other information from us? All right. Anything else from anybody? Again, public comment? Okay. We're adjourned.
Good stuff. Sometimes it's just too damn fun.
Yes, I'm just making sure.
No kidding, Friday night. Friday night, I'm reading the
all election, all city positions are going to be filled by paper scissors.